Faith here with your podcast, Welcome Toast. If you want breakfast in bed, sleep in the kitchen. Listen to our show in small bites or enjoy the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We have a Mother's Day thing, these two-ingredient biscuits that you can do just as plain cream biscuits, or you can do them with a little added sugar, making them just three ingredients, no special anything. And you have strawberry shortcake. So we're going to attach that to Mother's Day. Can't wait to talk about that. And we have a special little quiz coming up to start the show. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, Mark Raymond. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Robin Doyon Aiken is here, who is our senior producer. Hey, Robin.
Hey.
Okay, breaking news. There's a new pizza topping in town.
What?
Made my heart take
I'm
a little leap. Are you ready? You want to take a guess? What's the new pizza topping?
Oh.
Go ahead, Mark, go. Okay, anybody jump
no.
in?
Salmon.
Okay, it's a good try.
Everything's been on a pizza. What could they add?
A shoe. Here you come go. On, really?
Crackers.
Okay, because you all would have liked.
Dulce de leche? I don't know.
You know what? The day they did spaghetti on top of pizza was the day where I said,
This is it.
This is just it.
The macaroni
okay,
cheese.
So here it is. The new pizza with red sauce is topped with Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
No.
What?
How about that? This is a California pizza chain, Amici Pizza Kitchen. It has this pizza now on its menu. There's no reason why you can't try this at home to see what you think of this. And I say that.
Just dump a bag.
Give it a test drive. Okay. So
order
if you go
pizza?
Out, order a pizza to go and have it, you know,
Cheetos.
It comes to the house. Seriously, get the bag of Flamin'
I'm sorry,
Hot Cheetos and put it on top. Now, Chris is laughing. You can laugh,
is
but
there
I
cheese on it?
Am. Yeah, sure.
Like a regular
pizza. I am
pizza.
A crazy nut about Cheetos. I love
it. I do love the Cheeto.
When it's the afternoon and it's snack time, if I'm in a store and I get one of those little bags, I think it is the most exciting
thing. Gone it. The oh bag is God. Empty in seconds.
No, I always worry about food that could actually stain your fingers.
Yeah, your fingernails.
Oh, yeah.
It's questionable.
Oh, come on.
I like, am you not get, putting I, Cheetos in my pizza.
Listen, you eat it in the, you eat a bag of Cheetos in the car and you get out of the car, wherever you are, people know you just ate a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah.
Oh. It's on your face.
It's in your beard.
Yeah, it's in your beard. It's on your fingers. It's in your clothes.
Well, I think it's a great idea. I would really like to try this, and I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this because
Alex?
I like a little.
I'll try it.
I like a little crunch in the stuff, so I'm just going to see what
I'm just
this tastes
wondering,
like.
Is it going to be crunchy after?
Sure.
You know, I mean,
well, no, you
sure
don't put it in the oven.
You put it on
the pizza
each bite.
After the oven, yeah.
Afterwards.
Maybe just sprinkle, yeah.
Listen,
just sprinkle it on each
plate.
I frankly don't know how they make it at Amici Pizza, but I would just sprinkle it on and then chew and see what I like. See what
maybe,
I think about
maybe
it.
Maybe toast them up ahead of time or something so but they can.
They're
they can
so stay. Crunchy. You don't even need to do a thing to them. They're perfect.
Did you
but
guys
aren't
never...
you a fan of the potato chip on the tuna fish sandwich?
Yes.
So
that's kind
yes.
of right. Isn't
yes,
that
it
this
is.
Area
yes.
of
it's all a texture thing.
Ham sandwiches.
It's all
we put potato chips on every sandwich.
Okay, so
Doritos.
I'm telling you.
Maybe this is the new pizza.
This is the new pizza. And so here's another little piece of breaking news. I saw this in Food Network magazine. Scientists apparently have just uncovered these fossilized things that it turns out were food. And they did this. They went to Patagonia. They found these things. And it turns out after they did their testing, these are 52 million year old fossilized tomatillos.
Nice.
You know those
wow.
we
incredible.
Call them Mexican small tomatoes, a husk on the outside, they're green and they taste a little bit sour. They're gorgeous, sliced with all kinds of things.
Oh yeah.
You know, fish on a plate, just the way you would do tomatoes. They taste a little bit different. This is 5 times more old than anybody originally thought. 52 million year
That's
old
crazy.
Fossilized tomatillos. Think how far
wow.
back that goes. It surpasses anything else that they know of. Isn't
wow.
that unbelievable?
That's incredible.
I first thought you said tamales. I was thinking, who's making tamales back then?
Oh, yeah.
They might have, since they had tomatillos going. I know.
So authentic.
So I'm really encouraging you to try them. They're in the produce aisle of a supermarket. And they're with that stuff where you're not quite sure what to do with it. Mm-hmm. The chayote, pronouncing
it? Chipotle peppers. And
so they have little husks on them, and you just peel them off. Some people cook them, but you really can slice them.
Make good salsa?
We make a salsa with them. Mm. Yeah.
Should make a cocktail.
That's a great...
Like a tequila... Mm. Ooh. Cocktail.
Oh, juice them.
Would
yeah.
you try that?
Put them into the rim, Bloody Mary.
And Alex, rub the salt.
That's the best idea. Or whip it up in the food processor and see what happens. You know, add whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of cocktail. I would love for us to try that. Let's invent that. And
Let's
you can do,
do
this at home, too.
Oh, yeah.
And see what you come up with versus what we come up with. And then you tell us on Facebook. What can we give them? A bushel of tomatillos.
Give them a tamale.
See what you can come up with.
Whether you are celebrating Mother's Day or not, and it doesn't have to be someone in your family, it can be a friend you're celebrating, but whether you do that or not, this recipe I'm about to tell you about, and we have this posted online, it's so unbelievable. This is the most amazing biscuit recipe that I have ever encountered. These are two ingredient. As in one, two. Two ingredient cream biscuits.
Foolproof, right?
They are foolproof. It's because you're using self-rising flour, which has things in it that make these biscuits rise. They are creamy and airy, and they're so light and so delicious. And for Mother's Day, we have a trick. We tell you how to add just one third ingredient, a third, to make these into the perfect shortcake biscuits. Ooh. And that is just a little bit of sugar. Two ingredient biscuits, self-rising flour and heavy cream. And you'd brush a little of the heavy cream before you put it in the oven on the top, and it's shiny and beautiful golden when it comes out. And otherwise, you add just a touch of sugar if you're going to do strawberry shortcake for Mother's Day.
Perfect.
And this is our, you might do this with a barbecue. I would do the, I don't care if it's summer, winter, fall, spring.
I think you can do it all year round.
These are the go-to biscuits. This is at foodschmooze.org. You will find these around the internet. We've talked about these for ages, but I wanted to bring these back for Mother's Day. Now, Chris Prosperi, I asked him because I thought there's so many people now with gluten issues and can't have it, gluten sensitive. Jovial Foods makes that einkorn flour.
Yep.
And a lot of people who are gluten sensitive are able to tolerate the einkorn flour, not celiac, of course, gluten sensitive people. So I asked Chris, can you translate that? And he said he could. So if you are gluten sensitive, not celiac, but gluten sensitive, Chris, You substitute einkorn flour for the self-rising.
And you add one ingredient, baking powder.
Oh.
And you add 2 tablespoons.
Two tablespoons of baking powder. So einkorn instead of the self-rising flour.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the sugar if you want, if you're doing that, and the heavy cream. Two tablespoons of baking powder, and that's it. They come out.
Still foolproof.
Fantastic.
And they're still foolproof. And I think from what I've been doing with all my reading on this,
Thank you, Chris. You
can also, there are some gluten-free flours, like the mixes, that you can find that you can try and do the same thing with the baking powder, and it does come out okay.
Ah.
I read, that's the cool thing about recipes online. You get feedback, and I saw one biscuit recipe that was real similar to the one you're talking about, and they substituted gluten-free flour, and they said it was fine.
That is fantastic.
Right? So that's what the cool thing. You read feedback, right?
So I would like to put an idea forward for a Mother's Day strawberry shortcake using these biscuits, these two ingredient biscuits. So here's my trick. I like to have strawberry shortcake on Mother's Day. It's springy and everything, but everyone knows that it's a little early and strawberries need a little help right now still at this time. So I recommend roasting the strawberries first that you're going to use in your shortcake because it really concentrates the strawberries. It concentrates their flavor.
In the oven?
Yes, roast in the oven.
Idea.
350 at, or maybe even a little higher, Chris, if you're going to roast them for a shorter amount of time,
Perfect.
20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. I mean, keep an eye on them because you don't want them to go too far. But the idea is that because they're not super flavorful still in May, when you concentrate their flavors, it's going to make for a better shortcake.
That's genius.
Robin, I love this idea.
Genius.
Also, I was thinking you could you, what does everybody think, brush a little bit of balsamic on top of those strawberries before roasting.
Sure.
I wonder if that would add a little caramelization on the top. Would it, do you think?
Yeah, totally. Or a little honey maybe, or a little maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just to spice it up.
Red wine.
I was just thinking, we do this with tomatoes. We do this with tomatoes in the winter. It's a genius idea, Robin. When it's not tomato season and I want a good tomato, I try to go to the grocery store, find the best tomato I can, and I roast it because it intensifies the flavor and it's like almost having a real tomato. Yeah. Why wouldn't that work with strawberries?
You know,
of course
we always have strawberries that we have to throw away because they're covered with mold by the time we get to them, but I'm going to use your trick and start roasting them.
And then you can save them.
Yeah.
Jar them up in the fridge.
Put them in a Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
Use them, top ice cream with it if you're not going to make the biscuits or whatever, but just, you know.
Klondike bar.
Now, there are...
Hey, if you see that on my menu on Mother's Day, you know where I got it from.
Because
that's genius. Very cool. That is absolute genius.
Okay, here's the thing. We thought we'd do an avocado thing for you, and I'm completely going to give credit to somebody, and that is John Willoughby and his team at Cooks Illustrated. Because, you know, they've got that giant kitchen full of scientists, and they test and they test and they do all these scientific experiments with things, and they come up with information that is so valuable because it was tested. So it is a kind of Consumer Reports approach. And so one tip is from a bunch of tips on avocados from them. And then I have a recipe idea from Food Network, which I thought was really terrific. Maybe you folks have heard of it. I've never heard of it. It could also work for Mother's Day. So hang on here. Avocados, I'm constantly giving them the squeeze test.
Yeah, see if they're right.
I did it last night at the grocery store.
So did I.
And
the
color
never,
test.
Ugh.
Okay, so they're saying, you know, you're supposed to give a little bit, but if it stays punched in any way, there's no spring back, don't get that. It's too ripe. Mm. Another thing you can do is just wiggle the stem. And if you see something dark under the stem, don't do it. It's overripe.
Gotcha.
And if the stem won't wiggle at all, it's underripe. Some people have patience and put it on the counter. So you can just flick off the stem and do this test. So here's this question of how do you ripen avocados in the speedy way?
Paper bag?
I don't know if you do this at home. They said the paper bag thing works a little bit, traps the ethylene gas, and they ripen a little more quickly. So very, very good. But there is a way you can do it in the refrigerator. It will take a little bit longer because the chill slows down the ethylene gas. However, if you put the avocados in the front of the refrigerator, they will ripen in there. And I've always heard, keep them out of the refrigerator. So that was interesting information to me.
Hmm.
And if they're ripe, if you find your avocado is ripe and you're not ready to use it, stick them in the refrigerator for sure.
And that slows it down.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So that's that. Quickly, Food Network has this idea. Next time, you know how you do egg in a hole
with
slice of bread, the toast,
in the hole.
Little shot glass or glass, pull out the center. You see where my mind is. Okay. They said when you open the avocado, pull out that pit or in the other half, crack an egg.
I saw that online.
Isn't that great?
That's a great
idea. We do this at home all the time.
And you
bake it in the oven?
Yeah.
I've
never tried it, but I've seen it. Yeah.
Put some salt on a baking sheet so it doesn't wobble.
Yeah.
Crack the egg into it.
Yeah.
Make it a medium egg because a large one will overflow. 425, about 15, 18 minutes.
Oh, my God,
and you've got, and you can sprinkle
some
salsa.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I do it in the cast iron pan where I...
That's a Mother's Day.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I take the whole avocado out and slice a little bit off the bottom,
so it makes a little
and then I put a little bit of bacon fat in the pan, and then I put the egg inside. And
okay, you win.
Oh, that is really good.
A little salt and pepper, we're good.
Oh, maybe I just do a little lime on there.
It's like Huevos Rancheros.
Yeah. Then you take it out.
A little
salsa over the top.
Lime juice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, very, very good. This brings us to guacamole, but we'll handle that on another show. We keep doing it over and over again, but everybody's got a way to make this.
Ooh.
Ahead, we have a delicious rosé to tell you about. Just absolutely terrific and at a very affordable price point. And we also have one of the stars, I think, of the food world. He's one of the best writers going, Adam Gopnik of The New Yorker, author of many, many books. He's going to be our guest on the show. He's written a play that is premiering in New Haven at Long Wharf Theater. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton, and this is the Food Schmooze Party. We have, you want a free copy of the show? We'll send it to you. It's called a podcast. You probably know this, but if you don't, we'll send it to you on your phone or on your main computer, depending on what your situation is. If you don't have any of that, that's not going to work. Okay. But you can go to the library and tell them you want to go online and they could help you. But anyway, we've got this free podcast of the show, and we will, if you sign up for it one time at our website, we'll send it to you every week. You don't have to do anything. You can still listen live, but if you're busy, you can listen on your schedule. Okay, so just go to Foodschmooze, S-C-H, like school, M-O-O-Z-E, foodschmooze.org. Just sign in, and there you go. I'm with my treasured food buddies. More to the point, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province, and a wine broker Mark Raymond. Coming up, stay where you are, we have one of the great writers going. Adam Gopnik is on our show. I'm so excited. He's written a play, and it's at Long Wharf in New Haven, so cool. Stay with us for that. Let me get to the wine. We've got a wine discovery. Rosé fans in the room, right?
Oh, my God. Of course,
summertime.
Of course.
You know, it's gotten so that rosé is becoming so popular, people are drinking it year-round now, which I'm glad to see. But summertime is big time for rosé, and we've got a great one. I think it's $12, $13 a bottle.
That's great.
And it is very fresh tasting and gorgeously pink in the glass, huh?
It is a beautiful rosé. It's the perfect pale pink that you look for. It's not that darker cranberry color. It just screams
like
spring and summer. It's amazing.
Salmon.
It's like a pale pink.
Whisper pink, yeah.
Almost like a pale rose kind of color.
Yeah. I made Easter eggs this color.
Okay, cool. So...
I love it.
Okay, so this is
just looking at it. I love looking at it in the glass.
I love drinking.
Isn't this fresh? Robin, I think this was a hit with you, and you're just getting into rosés.
Well, it's the show, really, that has exposed me to more rosés, and so that's the thing. I probably would not go seeking them out at my wine shop, but since I've been tasting a bunch on the show,
Rosés are very inexpensive, comparatively speaking, for the quality. So if you spend under $15 and you get a fresh vintage, 9 out of 10 are going to be incredibly good.
I agree.
Can you help people understand where the pink color comes from and all its various shades, what that has to do with?
Well, it's my understanding that it comes from the red grapes that they use to make the wine, but it's very, very little skin contact. So normally what you would do is when you press the grapes, the grape juice and the skin would sit together for an extended period of time, extracting that dark purple red color. But this... they don't let the skins touch the juice at all. They just press the first press of the grapes, and then you get that just pale, pale pink.
Yeah, so this is three red grapes, Grenache, Sanso, and Syrah. So really total
dark,
red grapes.
Yeah, dark grapes.
And if you cut a grape in half, a red grape in half, the juice and the pulp and everything inside is clear.
So
the only thing that's colored is the outside. Yeah. So these three red grapes just get pressed, and they only have a tiny little bit of opportunity to get stained with the red skin. And then you make this beautiful color. But what you get with that little staining is a little more like oomph than you would get in a white wine. So it's
body,
like a little body and some structure, and which makes it good with food. So it's, I love drinking them by themselves.
Me
which
too.
Is icy cold. Yeah. But you can also have this with salmon or any other kind of fun fish or chicken.
You put it in the freezer just before serving?
I don't mind putting an ice cube in it either.
I did that for my mom the other day, and my mom said her dad says never baptize wine, but...
well, technically that's true because
like
it waters it down, but I don't
but
care.
But we all do it now.
Totally.
Okay, as it's online at foodschmooze.org. We have a picture of the label. You can just read it to your wine store. You can bring it and show them on your phone, and we tell you exactly what to say at the wine store. So this is, $12, $13 a bottle. It's Belarouche is the name of the vineyard. And so this is a rosé Côte du Rhône involving the grapes that Alex just talked about. Is it Michel Chapoutier?
Yes, and he's a big...
We like him.
Yeah, we love him.
So his name is on all these different kinds of wines, and when I see it, I think, okay, I can trust this. You too?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And once you can pronounce his name, it's always fun to be Chapoutier. It's just a fun one.
Okay, 2016. I would drink this with just about anything.
Well, you know...
By itself.
Yeah. When, you think about the grapes that are going into this, you know, you've got Syrah, Grenache, and Cinsault. Yes. So... If you typically think of the types of food that you have from this region, you would think anything off of the grill, lamb,
cheese,
this you can have this all through the summer with that stuff off the grill.
So paella.
It has a little bit of that weight, so it helps to work with those kind of foods.
So this
you get to chill it down.
Exactly. In this particular one, let me say that this is one that is so fresh that it has the faintest effervescence in it.
You can keep going, right?
Is this bubble?
Feel it on your tongue.
Yeah, what is that? Is that
the effervescence? Just CO2.
It's just from the fermentation.
Yep. It's so fresh that there's still carbon dioxide.
A little bubbly. Yeah, not bubbly,
it's
but just
pleasing.
Like,
it's pleasing. It's joyous. It's clean. It's got a little body to it. It's beautiful color in the glass. It goes with everything. What bad thing can you say about this? What's the price point?
It gets three yummies for me.
$12, $13.
Three out of three yummies.
It's at foodschmooze.org.
My highest rating. It gets three yummies.
And we tell you there to say that who the distributor is.
Brescom Barton, right?
Yeah. Know this when you go to your wine store, because it's not on the shelf. These stores, they only have so much shelf space, but they can get this from this distributor within 24 hours if it's a good wine store. So
I like what you said, too, about knowing that producer, because I don't know about you, I get lost in wine shops. And if you know one or two, if you're looking for a French wine and you know the producer name, you can find all kinds of wines with his name on it, and then you know to trust
those wines. You see Chapoutier and lots of stuff, and you can just flip over and know anything he's making is good.
He puts Braille on every label.
Oh, that's another way to find it, huh? Just go to
no,
go to,
well,
it, oh,
you can't
he?
Quite see it on this label, but on some of the other labels. Yeah. But you can feel it, and there's all kinds of legends about why he did this to begin with, and who knows what's true, but anyway, it's on there. Am I being fair to wine stores when I say a good wine store will get this from the distributor within 24 hours?
Every distributor can deliver the following day, but if you go in at 6 o'clock in the evening after work and the distributors have already closed, they can't get an order in for the next day. And sometimes, you know, they have orders coming on Thursday, for example, and it's Monday, and they'd rather just ship it on a Thursday. So cut them a little bit of slack, but if it's really important, most definitely, yes, they can get
If you're going to show up on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, they don't deliver on Saturdays. They don't deliver on Sundays.
I think this is why it's good to call ahead, and also good for the wine store to be honest. And say, here's why.
Yeah.
You know, our delivery is on Thursday.
But they can all get it is the point, right?
That's the point. Or 48 hours without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's fair, right?
Okay. Yeah. We were talking about Mother's Day, but this is really for everybody. But it would be a great Mother's Day thing.
Oh, my God.
When things are fresh in the market, quite often we like to see if we can find a way on the show to incorporate that ingredient into your recipes. And right now, among many other things, we have arugula, that peppery green, and I love it. And
Me
as well.
I made a lemony arugula prosciutto pasta.
Ooh.
And so I've done a recipe.
Whoa. You tell people, more people should cook with arugula because it is an amazing flavored green. Not just for salads.
It wilts down.
Wilts down. Beautifully.
Yeah. Okay. So here's how you do this. So this is on the website, foodschmooze.org. You cook the pasta, and when it's done, you just take a cup of that cooking water and you just set it aside, and then dump the water out, drain the pasta, and just set the pasta aside for a second. And then back in that empty pasta pot, you put lemon juice, lemon zest, butter, cheese, and that cup of pasta water. And the water, you're just going to do a little at a time in your mixing until it has a kind of creamy consistency. And then you put the pasta back into the pot, into that sauce, with the chopped up prosciutto, a little dash of hot pepper flakes if you're using that. And then you add the arugula, which is fresh, in there, and you stir, and the arugula wilts from the heat off of everything.
Yeah.
And a little salt and pepper to taste, and you serve it with a little... You know,
Parmesan.
Grating of more Parmesan in there. And I put one final squeeze of lemon juice on the top. And there you go.
What does the arugula do?
It wilts up a little bit. And it's got a peppery feel against the cheese richness. Yeah. with the butter, the lemon.
And the citrus,
you know,
yeah.
The little bitterness.
That salty
too.
Snap of the prosciutto is what really.
That sounds so good.
It's a missing flavor in our repertoire of flavors because it has that little bit of bitterness at the end. Not a lot, just a teeny bit with that sharp
bite. Yeah.
Oh, you love to taste that in food. Not in high amounts, but a little tossed in a pasta. Yep. It's heaven.
So I feel like if you have a container of arugula left over, salad greens, instead of letting them go bad, you should toss them into everything.
Totally.
You
can, right? Sure.
Oh, stews, sauce.
You know, Alex, I love that comment. Mm-hmm. That's really a great comment. Great idea to do.
Always have to
don't
have
let
salad.
It go to waste.
You know where I like it is risottos or any kind of rice dish. Same thing, just like you said, fold it in right at the end, right before you serve it. Rice dishes.
Disappears.
Yeah, beautiful color, too.
Chris, when you tell us about your friend in Italy and how they do pasta there, and he chops up fine everything in the vegetable drawer, and no matter almost what condition it's in, there you go with your leftover arugula.
Chop it up
and use it almost like you were sprinkling chives on things.
Yeah. And it has that really amazing little flavor.
Does
that
he sweat it in olive oil or whatever?
No, you just toss
just
it
raw.
Right at the end.
Right
because
at the
it
end.
Just wilts in and sort of melts into whatever you're making.
And adds
a pasta
vitamins
or a
too.
Rice. Oh, sure. Yeah. Hmm. Another spot for arugula is pizza. When you get a pizza and you just take an arugula salad, El Forno in Old Saybrook does this, and then you just put that arugula salad on top of a slice of pizza.
One of my favorite pizzas.
And it wilts. It lightly wilts, but some of it stays crispy.
But how about
Before you put down the arugula, just put on some of that really thinly sliced prosciutto.
I knew you
and
were
then
going there.
Sprinkle over the top with the arugula salad.
So there we
Maybe
go.
A little shaved parm.
Yep.
But on top of the red sauce with the mozzarella cheese, so you get all that under there, too.
And how about when they do veal or pork milanese, the chop is in?
Yeah.
And they coat it with a breadcrumb, a crispy outside breadcrumb coating on the outside, and top on top of salad or salad on top of the chop.
I love
both
that.
Ways.
Love
Me
that.
Too.
And
love
it wilts
so could you
a
use
little
Cheetos
bit.
For the milanese?
Yeah,
right?
Cheetos milanese with arugula salad on top.
You know there
that
is
so.
We're
cool.
Tying the whole show together here.
No, you think. If you go online, because I've done this, there are so many Cheetos recipes. You cannot believe it.
Cheetos Milanesa. I can see it now.
You know what?
It's
I
so
can see
orange.
It.
Oh, how can
it
you not?
Can be a food
I do not want to clean that pan.
It can be a food group. Cheetos can definitely be a food group.
I mean, I don't know what's in there, but they don't know these. I just think they should get some kind of prize. These scientists, these food scientists.
Can you make
the
Cheetos Milanese again, Dad? And how long have Cheetos been around? Forever.
Since the 40s or 50s?
I guess.
Son,
I had
this is for your son. He's a cook there with his, you know, Klondike bar. Is he into the Cheeto thing?
He would totally.
He loves Cheetos. Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't?
Totally.
Leaving him to his own devices, what would he do with Cheetos? Let's find out.
I'll
Can you take
ask.
A movie of
Put him
it,
in the
a
kitchen.
Video?
I think I
Put
could.
Put him in the kitchen and say, Cheetos,
right,
and I
Daniel,
need a meal.
Here are your, here
but
are your
no,
ingredients.
No Cheetos combined with Klondike bar.
No.
Although,
oh, that's could work. Bad.
Can I throw
that's
another one?
Bad.
Who, how about Fritos?
Sounds like a
Do you remember
Friday
Fritos?
Night.
Fritos,
sure.
Yeah.
Love those. That you don't see those around as
we
much as you
eat them.
Love Frito corn chips.
They have the big scoopable ones.
Yeah, Fritos corn chips. Heaven. Those are old school, right?
Yeah. Really crunchy.
Really crunchy.
What was it that I've had with Fritos lately? I mean, they're using them for so many things
sure.
now.
I love when
it's
they
a good crust.
I love the bag. They put chili in a bag, and then they put the Cheetos in with it and eat it with a spoon.
How about on top of your barbecued pork sandwich?
Heaven.
Fritos. Crumbled up Fritos on top of your barbecue pork
sandwich.
I might do the potato chips.
Yeah.
On
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
but I could see the Fritos.
Yeah, not as salty as potato chips.
I could see
I think
Cheetos on that
right?
sandwich too, I have to say.
But Cheetos could be on there too, for sure.
I mean, if you think about that crunch against the white bread and that taste of Cheetos against the white bread, that is good. That's gonna be good.
That's
especially when the bread is so soft it conforms
no
to the
convincing
shape of the
needed
cheese.
Here. I'm in.
A new food group has been created today.
Okay, I have an idea. What about a Cheetos banh mi?
Oh,
ooh.
Yeah. Totally. Yep.
I haven't seen that online.
Well, but I can see it putting it on a sandwich with that vinegary kind of pickling stuff.
Oh,
and then
Yeah.
With Cheetos, help wash it
down.
Absolutely. How about macaroni and cheese with a Cheetos crushed
instead of
breadcrumbs.
Instead of breadcrumbs, you crush them.
Yeah.
Couple them up on top.
Let's just take
That's
it a step
right
up. Let's put lobster mac and cheese with a Cheetos crunch.
No. Would you ruin good lobster with Cheetos?
No, come on.
Robin, you're not talking. Are you not a Cheetos fan?
I do not like have Cheetos
Nichols
in the house.
Nicholson May. Yes.
You don't have Cheetos in the house. Well, we never
we have
grown,
other junk food.
Growing up, we didn't have Cheetos in the house. We used to have to sneak out and get our Cheetos, but we got them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody gets them.
Yeah.
Well, okay. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Coming up, one of the best writers going who's done a play for Longworth Theater, and that is Adam Gopnik. His play is The Most Beautiful Room in New York. Director Gordon Edelstein, and wow, I can't wait to see it. We're going to talk with Adam Gopnik next.
Down your coffee cup and tell your wife when the market's marked you up, you're always marked for life. It's no amble in the park if you got goods to buy and New York decides you're not what it wants. Then the market horses haunts you.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the east end of Long Island, that means the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. I'm Faith Middleton. To hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Oh, I've been counting the minutes for this conversation because this is one of my favorite writers out there. This is Adam Gopnik of The New Yorker, also an author of so many books. I think I've probably read every single thing he's ever written. And the exciting thing for me, and I think for everybody, you know, if I can presume to say so, is that he and Gordon Edelstein of Longworth Theater have teamed up and they have created, this is Adam's writing, a play at Longworth Theater. It's having its premiere right now. My prediction, off to Broadway it goes. It's called The Most Beautiful Room in New York. And food is involved, and that's why he's on the show, except that I would find any excuse. Adam, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hey, thank you, Faith. Thank you so much. I should add right away, too, that it's not merely a play. It's a musical play.
Exactly.
With wonderful music to my lyrics by David Shire, the great Academy Award-winning composer of countless Broadway musicals as well.
And what kind of orchestra do you have there?
We have a small chamber orchestra, seven pieces, really kind of little jazz band. And it's, I have to say, I like it better than a big band because there's a kind of intimacy to the show, and that band reflects the feeling.
Should we tell the story in a short way of the play, or should
sure,
that be a surprise?
I'd be glad to.
Okay,
although
go.
I will add, Faith, that I am like the world's worst elevator pitcher, but I will try and give you the elevator pitch, as they call it in Hollywood. It's about family, the Kaplan family, who have been running a beautiful little restaurant, The Most Beautiful Room in New York, for the past 20 years off Union Square, right by the Green Market. And, of course, as always, New York, when they open, nobody came there. And now that they've made everybody want to come there, they can't afford to stay there. The new lease comes in, and they can't possibly afford it. And the only thing that David, our hero, David Kaplan, the chef, can think of doing is going back to his oldest friend in the food world, Sergio Mimesso, who has, in the years since they split up, become a kind of cross between Anthony Bourdain, Mario Batali, and Bobby Flay, is a huge media star. And he asks him to invest in the restaurant again. But what David doesn't know is that Sergio and David's wife, Claire, had a passionate love affair 20 years before they never told him about. So we have
scandalous.
Both the struggle to keep a restaurant alive in the midst of the craziness of New York real estate and a classic love triangle. And that's basically the story we tell.
So this is on through the end of May,
like,
by the
sounds
way.
Sounds like every restaurant I've ever worked in.
Yes, exactly. Nobody tells anybody about the passionate love affairs, yeah. And everybody tells everybody that they can't afford the rent.
So. I know. It's impossible to go to a dinner party with food people without them saying, did you know so-and-so is secretly with so-and-so?
Oh.
And this one doesn't know, but this one does. And it's just unbelievable. Well, terrific. I cannot wait. wait to see this thing. So what is it like for you to see? I once asked a dancer what it was like to skate on skates on an ice rink, and she said it was like a dream come true for her. So for you to have the words leap into the air with music, what is that like?
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, the truth is that my dream in life had always been to be in musical theater. When my wife, Martha, and I came to New York City from Canada on a bus in 1980, I had the college show. I had written the college show at McGill about a great Russian constructivist architect named Tatlin. And I was sure that I was 6 weeks from Broadway, you know, because the demand for Broadway shows about Russian constructivist architects is legendary.
Oh, yeah.
And I also had a tape of the best songs that I had written for this show and for myself. And we knew someone who had once been to dinner with someone who knew the sister of Art Garfunkel's psychotherapist. And we felt that on that basis, we would be guaranteed I'd get an immediate life as a songwriter. It never happened, of course. Life took a different turn for me. But it had always been strong in the back of my mind. I love musical theater in all of its forms. It's, for me, the most moving of, truly, of all art forms, more than opera or anything else. Because, you know, it's the one form where ordinary people get to sing of extraordinary emotions. Mm. And to hear my words set to David Shire's beautiful music and to try and create those moments, which you must have in a musical play, where people's experience forces them to sing. You know, that's the weird thing about a musical, is that you have to create moments when this very weird thing, people singing instead of speaking, feels completely natural, inevitable. That's the art of the musical. Mm. And so to have to craft those moments, carpenter those moments, when the only thing a character can do is sing, it's terrifically hard and unimaginably rewarding when it works and you can feel the audience rise with the words and the music.
I can't say it enough. Adam Gopnik. He's the man on the show today. talking about his play at Longworth Theater, which is having its world premiere, I like to say, the most beautiful room in New York, very much about the food world. And so that's one of the reasons that he's on the show. This is the first time you've ever made me understand, I happen to like musicals, that just like with novels, musicals too, you have to believe the singer.
You totally have to believe the singer. You have to believe the character. And there's no breed of actors who I admire more than musical theater actors. And we've been blessed to have a fantastic ensemble for this show, led by Anastasia Barzi, who's a fantastic singer and actress, and Matt Bogart and Constantine Maroulis. Those are our three leads. It's astonishing because they have to do everything that actors do, that is, make a character real, full dimensional, and believable, and sing beautifully at the same time. They're a very special breed.
Did you learn what the difference is between that authenticity you're describing and that thing that we all know can happen in musical theater where someone goes, oh, Henry, you know, where you just think, well, this is a kind of over-the-top projection for the audience, unless it's meant to be a part of, you know, in a producer's kind of way.
It's an incredible craft. You know, one of the things that you learn, for instance, I have one of the singers and actresses I admire most, Melissa Errico, who was one of the people who helped me develop the show, said to me once, "Is, you know, the whole key is don't write the song in the scene." In other words, it's very kind of, when musical theater isn't working, it's because someone says, "You know, I love you, Clara." And she says, "Oh, you don't really love me." And then we are into the song, "How I Love Clara," right? And we all know exactly what the song is going to be from the words said immediately before. And part of the art of it is to craft it so that even when you feel a song is coming, you don't know what the content of the song will be. The song always has to surprise you. And it has to lift up through an arc of narrative to the next landing point in the story. Gordon Edelstein is a fantastic director. You know, we've worked together now for, 6 years. And all he thinks about is story and staying on story and how this next song drives the story forward. And for me as a prose writer, Faith, you know, it's different. I love propulsion and I love narrative, and I try to give even my collections of nonfiction essays some sense of propulsion. But, you know, it's a pleasure when you're reading prose to meander a little bit if you feel you're in good company. You like to take a digression. You like to nestle in a parenthesis for a minute or two. You can't do that on stage, you know, because we're controlling your time. You're not controlling our time. Oh. And we have to give you an absolute linear propulsion of storytelling and at the same time have some wit and beauty and melody along the way. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
I'm in love. This is the best. So are you actually saying that the music, never thought of this either, that the content of the musical piece that's being sung is actually supposed to move the story forward, not just reflect what was said?
It's not only supposed to, it absolutely must. And when musicals don't work, no matter how gifted they are, it's because instead of advancing the story, the songs comment on the story, or they're simply kind of internal soliloquies that sit inside the character and don't move the story forward in some way. It's one of the reasons, you know, Faith, why some of the most gifted songwriters in the world, Sting or Paul Simon, have had troubles with the musical theater form, because their natural instinct is to write kinds of internal soliloquies. Think of all those great Sting songs, right, that really are kind of sit inside the soul of the singer, fantastic things, but they're not narrative in that way. They don't move the story forward. And, you know, the other thing that you learn, as I have been in this apprenticeship, and I am no more than an apprentice to musical theater, is, you know, you just were singing a few bars of I'm in Love with a Wonderful Guy from South Pacific. And, you know, I'm in love, right?
Yes.
And one of the things that you learn, you know, I can't beat the graduate student out of myself, and I've done as much reading as I can in the history of American musical theater. And, you know, that song, for instance, is famous because it's failed completely on stage when it was first done, and they couldn't figure out why it was failing. Great song. And it's because Mary Martin was washing her hair. But she was washing her hair on stage at the same time as she was singing, and there was too much for the audience to pay attention to. They couldn't pay attention to an actress washing her hair and singing the song. So they had her sing the song first and wash her hair after, and it became a classic.
Wow.
A standard. That's how finely detailed, how acutely carpentered moments in musical theater have to be.
Oh, great word. So this is Adam Gopnik, and he has written a play, The Most Beautiful Room in New York, having its premiere at Long Wharf Theater in New Haven now through the end of May. I encourage you to see it. I'm just about to jump into that audience myself. I cannot wait for this. Very much about the food world.
Totally.
It's a musical, and there's an orchestra, kind of a jazz group. Fabulous. So Mary Martin was on the show years ago, and she said, I'm trying to think if this was about Cole Porter. And anyway, she was talking about how scary it was with his keen sense of language and timing to have him come to rehearsal and hear her or anyone, particularly her, do these words, because he would jump up and say, that's not what I hear in my head. You've got to duplicate. So how exacting are you when you're sitting there?
I'm the least exacting writer around. I'm just so insanely grateful to this wonderful ensemble who are doing my stuff that I'm always inclined to say, if it feels more comfortable for you to do it that way, do it that way. You know, I live for language, and I live for syllable by syllable through words. So if something is really off, I squeal and I say so. But the truth is that, and this is one thing that I think is, I don't know how to put this very well, Faith, it's one of the things that generationally that we feel, those of us who grew up listening, say, to the Beatles and Joni Mitchell just as much as we listen to Cole Porter or Rodgers and Hart and love both equally, is that we're inclined to be a little bit slacker about, I don't mean slack in a bad way, but we're inclined to be less hyper-rigorous about rhymes and scansion if an emotion is being communicated. You know, that's, you know, Joni Mitchell didn't always have a perfect rhyme, but she always had a perfect song. So I try to be something less of a disciplinarian, because for me, the essential thing is that the essence of the emotion get communicated. And as long as that's happening, I'm glad to play a little bit with the language to make it easier for the singer.
And yet, is there a part of you, as there is in me, that sometimes wishes that more modern music would get away from the sort of, you know, Gertrude Steinian, a rose is a rose?
Yes, you know, I'm a freak in that way, because though I grew up listening to the Beatles and the Stones and Joni Mitchell and all that fantastic stuff, the truth is I discovered Lorenz Hart, Rodgers and Hart, when I was about 14, in the way that more normal kids discover Bukowski or, you know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, or, you know, really daring things. I discovered Rodgers and Hart. And I love that kind of rich, complicated lyric writing full of internal rhymes and self-conscious wit. That's my great passion, really. So, yeah, you know, I think we could use a lot less repetition and more Gilbert and Sullivan in all of our lives.
Adam, do you have way in your background, if you've ever done your genealogy? Have you, by the way? Have you ever done it?
Sort of in a minimal way, yeah.
Yeah. Is there any tradition of, you know, big storytelling in your family?
A lot of big liars in my family.
That translates.
On my father's side, are all Russian Jews, right? And they all are people who live for teasing and for joking. And, you know, my grandfather, may he rest in peace, lived to tell the world's corniest jokes. And I actually have the hero of our show having a habit in telling corny jokes. So that whole notion that you turn anything that happens to you into a story and then you tell it over dinner, that was a very deep thing in my family.
I just learned that way, way, way back there in one of the earlier tribes, there's someone who was responsible for the storytelling or the history, passing it on, who's
really?
My relative was, that was his job, and his name was John the Bad Behavior.
That's
so
great.
Wow. So I'm interested in this tradition now in families. Your grandfather sounds wonderful, by the way.
He was a dear man. He really was.
Yeah. Will your family come to see this play?
Yes. You know, I have six brothers and sisters, and they're coming in dribs and drabs. You know, it's hard to corral them all at the same time. But one of my brothers is working on, my only brother, I'm heavily sistered, is doing some research in New Haven at Yale, so he'll be there. And my parents, who are in their 80s and live on a farm, a crazy farm in Ontario, are driving down as well.
Oh.
So I'll be delighted to see them. Although, you know, it's a very funny thing. They're astonishing people. I love them very much. But they are not fans of the musical theater for the most part. They'll be fans of mine because it's their son. But they were of a generation that were less interested in Broadway than they were in Baroque music and so on.
Oh.
And it was a kind of funny kind of rebellion on my own part that I developed such a passion for the American musical.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm still devoted to every single word you write. Can't
even
wait
after,
to get
even
there.
Even after listening.
Even after this. Adam the Good Behavior. Thank you.
I was trying to be. Thank you so much for attending.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. See you soon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you.
Me
Bye-bye.
Too. Adam Gopnik, his new play, The Most Beautiful Room in New York, is premiering, world premiere at Long Wharf Theater through the end of May. I encourage you to see this one. Very much about the food world. And it's a musical. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes and never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. See you there.